Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Modified, Book 1 in the Manipulated series, by Harper North, narrated by M. Eldridge. 60 years ago, confidential, Ref, JD 8486, 10th of March, 2087. Memorandum. Resource Security and Mining Settlement Protocols. We are 40 years into the gradual reversal of the Earth's magnetic poles. Our ability to build a flourishing society based on our advanced genetic modification technology has reached its apex. We are now forced to move on to more aggressive innovation to move us into the future. Society cannot move forward without radical change. To secure the Enhanced Humans Coalition's ability to provide rare earth minerals for societal stability and advancement, we are issuing the system-wide development of Dweller Mining Settlements. As of now, all dwellers have been fully supported by the EHC with little return on investment. This memo is signally the start of our efforts to build mining operations in each of our mineral-rich underground habitats. Requirements: each settlement will establish a 70% mandatory workforce to work the mines. The remaining 30% will be allocated for operations and security forces. To ensure a strong workforce going forward, a dweller fostering system will be put into place. Details of this system will be forthcoming. All able miners will be required to work 10-hour shifts for maximum production. Dwellers that refuse assignments will be restricted from food allocations and living amenities. EHC operatives will routinely monitor the development of this program to ensure order and protect our future. The formation of this dweller mining system is vital to our ability to maintain our surface infrastructure. Your region is required to have an active mining operation up and running in no more than 3 years. All equipment has been allocated and is being processed for delivery. As always, the EHC leadership is at your disposal. Contact our processing division for assistance. Edward Nejem, Founder and Director of the EHC. Chapter 1. Present Day. One false move and that's it. I'm dead. Sweat drips into my ear as I grip the crumbling ledge of the cavern wall and yank on my too slack line. My belayer, living it up safe on the ground below, is a lazy, easily distractible, pathetic excuse for a human being. And also my closest friend. I glance down between my boots. I'm dealing with a lot of rope up here, Lacey. She jerks the line, getting rid of the excess that formed from my rapid ascension up the cavern face. I press my boots against a sturdy rock and lean back, allowing the equipment to secure me up in a seated position while I take a breather. After a moment, I dig into the pocket of my cargo pants for a can of spray paint. With one hand, I hold on to the rope, and with the other, I tag a line of green dots along the wall, marking areas with considerable traces of valuable cerium. The leeches up top have us expanding operations and creating newer tunnels, but I don't mind. This part of the mine's not so harsh compared to the older, muskier areas that are heavily polluted from excessive activity. The air here is cleaner. No need for an uncomfortable respirator. A loud, obnoxious bell screeches, and Yase Tolbert, the local mining boss, screams from several tunnels back at some fresh-out-of-the-oven miners that they have to work late for not producing. The good old days. Lacey, I'm ready to dive, I call down. She grips my lifelines tight. Got it, Finn. I suck in a breath, heart pounding. The last thing I want to do is fall 15 feet down to solid rock, just because I have a terrible belayer. When my boots hit the bottom, I grunt. Lacey and I strip out of our climbing gear as we get to our lockers. Neither of us speaks as we drag ourselves toward the rusted metal bridge, leading us back to the older mines, where we can store our tools. Nearly 50 miners, most near to my own age of 17, shuffle their boots over the rocks, none of us bothering to push past one another. It's not like we're more excited to be off our shift than on.
Finley! Lacey!
A familiar voice calls out after the two of us stash our gear and head down the metal stairwell. A skinny redhead boy peers up at us, and we meet him at the bottom of the metal shaft. Battery-powered lamps line the inner workings of the tunnels, the area called the slack, leading to and from the mines. In the dim light, I study the kid's filthy face. His hair is smudged with soot, and a black ring circles his mouth from his respirator. He's assigned to one of the grittier areas of the mine. Lacey smiles curtly at him. Hey, Drape. Be nice, Lacey. Drape's a sweet kid, I whisper. Lacey playfully elbows him, and Drape gives us a goofy smile. The three of us begin our regular march by way of the tunnels and down various metal staircases toward the living quarters. These two, Lacey and Drape, are perhaps the only people whom I care to speak to. We've known one another since our days in the oven. No one here truly comes from a family. We were all raised in the oven, a place that is designed to simply keep new kids alive until they're old enough to work the mine. Newborns go straight there to allow their parents to get right back to work. The majority of kids don't even know their mothers, and I'm one of them.
Did you two feel that quake earlier today?
Drape struggles to keep up. He's younger than Lacey and I by about 2 years, but he's forever right on our tails. Mine especially. He's a pain, but useful to us on occasion. Might as well have the kid around. Everyone felt that quake, dope, Lacey says. Drape frowns and looks to me.
Funny. You weren't climbing during that quake, were you, Finn?
No, I say. Quakes are common now. I've been told that pre-flip they were rarer, but that was 100 years before my lifetime. A lot has changed then, I suppose. Old-timers speak of a simpler past, when all of mankind lived above the surface. It's hard to imagine living anywhere but down below, but I envy the leeches who get to live above ground. I'm a little shaky on the science behind the whole event, but evidently, it has to do with the Earth's magnetic poles flipping. Somehow, it caused the sun to radiate the planet at a greater intensity, along with earthquakes, climate change, and a bunch of crap I don't care to think about. The older folks say it's hotter on the surface, but I wouldn't know. Without warning, Lacey stops and grabs the railing, the old metal clanging in protest. The other miners continue forward. I roll my eyes, grab Drape's shoulder, and push past them to get back to her. What's wrong? I ask. She lets loose a loud, exaggerated sigh. Oh, Finley, she fake sobs. I'm bored. I frown at her fake drama. Oh? Lacey flings her head back, her long black hair cascading down her back. She shoots me a devilish look with those dark irises of hers. Her pretty, tawny skin has not been tampered with too harshly after what was a considerably easy workload for us. Unlike poor Drape, whose pale skin is covered in miner's dust. What? I snarl to make her get to whatever point she's hoping to make. I heard a rumor, she sings, swaying her finger back and forth. Drape's lips twist up into a slight smile. I remain serious, as usual. And what rumor was that, Lacey? I ask. She grips the railing even tighter and hops up, sitting on the fence and clasping her boots together on the bottom half of the railing to keep from tumbling over. Lacey lowers her head and smirks, then shows her teeth like a wild animal. I heard a new shipment arrive from the EHC.
The leeches send anything good? Drape asks.
They always do, Lacey says. I sigh. Sometimes I think our little games are just that to Lacey. Games. For me, it's about survival, not a thrill rush. The grin on Lacey's lips gives away her excitement about this shipment she's referring to. The EHC usually just sends equipment to mine their minerals, but on rare occasions, when their leaders are feeling friendly, they send down special treats like toys for the kids in the oven or snacks for the mining bosses. Whatever will make them feel as if they've done a great and humanitarian aid during their time in office. For lowly dwellers like us, seeing any of that stuff is highly unlikely. But that hasn't ever stopped my ragtag gang. Drape and Lacey eye me, pleading. Fine, I say, readjusting the sweaty, long strands of brown hair falling from my bun. Lacey squeals excitedly before I snap my finger to my lips. We continue through the slack, hiding ourselves amongst the crowd. We walk with heads high, and without speaking, we turn down a tunnel opposite the rest of the crowd. Confidence is key. We act as if we're supposed to be headed this way, like we've been sent on an assignment by Yasei. We come to a metal stairwell, and Drape silently points up. Shadows dance across the cavern's surface. Mining guards. We huddle under the stairs, the boots of the guards clinging and clanging above. The men speak clearly, no raspy sounds in their breaths. That's how you know you can't trust a person. They haven't spent their lives breathing in mining dust, so their lungs are clean. Guards live in a position of privilege. Well, as close to privilege as a dweller can get. I remind myself that there are worse existences than working in the mines. Those who can't or won't wind up homeless and starving.
Yeah,
one of them says lazily, his boots clanging louder as the men descend.
So, I about nearly fell off the bridge today during that quake.
Lacey and I giggle. Drape has a reputation for tumbling off the sides of bridges during earthquakes. I swear, every other time there's a quake, the kid is crossing a mining bridge. I'm surprised he's alive. Drape pitches his lips, and we try to contain our laughter. The men continue their casual banter and eventually reach the base floor. I hold my breath as they continue down the stretch of tunnel that will lead them back to the slack. When they're out of sight, the three of us hurry out of our hiding spot and head up, treading lightly on the metallic stairs. At the top, we enter into a more elevated tunnel, with scrap metal-lined walls leading to a large doorway. You have the pass cards? Lacey asks. I nod and dig in my pocket. The pass cards are one of my prouder thefts. They allow me to gain access to just about anywhere, and it makes my side hobby of borrowing much easier. With a quick swipe down a panel by the entrance, the double doors whoosh back. The three of us scurry inside the immense, airy bay and hide behind a bunch of crates. The shipping center is probably the cleanest, most soot-free place in the mine. People actually sweep here and even use cleaning products. It's almost hilarious, as if we're leeches living on the surface. The ceiling, walls, and floor are different here, too. Not scrap metal, built to last. Check it, Lacey says in a whisper, gesturing to the shafts. One of the leeches.
Whoa,
Drape breathes. He's never seen a leech. Their stiff, dark uniforms are a dead giveaway. They're also cleaner, and don't have that inevitable miner's cough. Lacey and I have gone on a few excursions without him, so we've seen them once or twice. Leeches rarely grace us with their presence, unless there's been a shipping error or they're sending special gifts. I grin as I see several fellow dwellers pulling crate after crate from the elevator shafts. Oh, they must have something really valuable today, I say under my breath. And whatever it is, they've got a lot of it. Good call coming today, Lacey. With that many crates, if one or two items go missing, it's unlikely they'll notice.
Maybe it's extra rations,
Drape whispers, full of innocent hope in his voice. It's doubtful, but I don't want to ruin that smile of his. I glance away, not answering him, straining to hear what the leeches are saying, but I can't quite make the conversations out. Their voices are even smoother than the guards, their lungs untainted by mining tunnels at all. Fresh air daily. Mutant freaks. I know I only pretend to see these people as monsters to make myself feel better. To stay sane. Let's get closer, I whisper, raising my finger to my lips. They both agree, and we slide cautiously, raising our feet up high to avoid our slip-resistant boots skidding on and marking the shiny floor. Can't leave evidence. We work our way around the outer wall of the space, staying out of the leech's sight. Most of them have clearly never been below the earth, given how jumpy they are, and the guards are gushing all over them in an attempt to gain favor. Pathetic. With us on the opposite side, we're hidden amongst the cluster of shipment arrivals. The leeches and mining guards have congregated in the center of the room. The three of us stand behind one massive crate, a wooden box that towers high above our heads. The lid sits askew. This one has already been pried loose. Drape taps my shoulder and motions to a label on the face of the crate. Yasei Tolbert reads the stamp on the side. I've never been a fan of the mining boss, so the thought of stealing goods meant for him makes a thrill twitch in my stomach. The leeches jet for the elevators, and soon they're gone. All but three of the guards quickly tail them out of the shipment area and toward the exit leading back into the slack. It's now or never. Lend me a boost, I whisper. Let's have a peek and see what our slimy friends brought us. Drape and Lacey grin back at me. They bend down low and each extend their interlocked hands to one another. I place my right foot in Drape's palms, and my left I give to Lacey. Together, they boost me until I'm high enough to grip the edge of the crate. A shadow from the corner of the room casts on the half-empty crate, so I can't really tell what I'm seeing just yet. I lean in, and then it happens. The crate creaks from the weight I put on it. The three remaining guards spin toward us. In an instant, I recognize one of them. His balding scalp gleams from the fluorescent glow above as he steps in our direction, a furious scowl on his face. He's no guard. It's Yasei. Just Arlok. I wish I had checked out the group of men a little better before attempting to rob them. My stomach lightly churns as that large, balding cretin stumbles our way. Yasei isn't exactly known for being merciful. Drape suddenly pushes up from underneath my right foot, tumbling me into the crate. My shoulder smacks into the wood and pain shoots down my arm. I bite down hard to stifle a cry.
Do you hear that? Yasei growls.
There's no hiding the fact we're here now. I shift to see what's going on through a crack in the crate. Like a flash, Drape moves out in front of the men. That stupid, scrawny ginger is offering himself up as a sacrificial lamb to save mine and Lacey's hides. Why did he have to go and do that?
Hey, Yasei, Drape says playfully. You're in trouble, boy, Yasei calls as the two guards follow close behind him. Sorry, so sorry,
Drape waves.
I didn't mean to be in here.
Lacey, giggling like a little girl, saunters out and curtains her arms around Drape, giving him a stern kiss on the cheek. I cross my arms over my chest, Knowing what she has planned certainly won't work.
Ew, we got caught, Lacey says, as if this isn't a horrendous offense.
She laughs and nuzzles her nose into Drape's collarbone, acting as though they were just two lovers caught in the deed. You say, I know, is not buying it. I don't have to see his expression to know that.
Make sure no one else is in here,
Yasei orders the guards in his croaking voice. He sneers and yanks Lacey away from Drape, shoving the two of them apart. I move back, heart racing. What if the guards check down into the crate? In a flash, I tuck myself in a corner alongside the only metal container in the shipment. Unable to resist, I quietly open the box. If we make it out of here, I don't want to leave empty-handed. Inside sits a tiny black device. It's oval in shape, with a glass touch panel and a protruding tip. The metal container also has Yasei's name on it. What's so special about this one? I don't know what the big deal is, Lacey says. You know how hard it is to get some privacy around here, Yasei. The door was left open, is all.
It's coded! It doesn't get left open!
Yasei yells. Ignoring them, I stare at the item. What could it be? I snatch it up just as Lacey releases a cry. I jump, almost dropping the device, and it beeps to life. Oh, crap. Any sound from this thing is bound to alert the guards. I stuff it in my pocket, pressing my hand over it as it emits three muffled beeps. The device vibrates, and something pricks my wrist. I jolt back, my head bashing against the back of the crate, and my head spins. Chapter 2. My eyelids blink and my focus returns. What happened? The throbbing sensation coming from the back of my head brings me to my senses. On my hands and knees, I scurry to the corner of the crate. I peer out through the crack, catching a glimpse of Lacey, or at least her legs. A guard stands with a long stun weapon pointed out at Drape. Drape raises both hands up, stammering. He steps back, shaking.
Don't shock me,
he pleads, but the man gets Drape right in his gut, and he doubles over, landing next to Lacey. Panic floods me. I know that coming into the shipment area was stupid, but knocking out the two trespassers with that weapon is an overreach of power. These are the only people I have in this world. I can't lose them. My fingertips tingle, and a warm sensation floods my body. I touch the device in my pocket, and the memories flood back. I feel different. My vision whirls, and an urge to sleep consumes me. Breathe, Finn. Your friends need you. Heart racing, I slowly rise. Instinctively, I flex my muscles, and every nerve ending pricks under my skin. Yes, I'm very different. My thought speeds in a million different directions, but I'm also calm. My heart rate returns to normal, and a strange sense of peace and clarity overtakes me. I pull the device out of my pocket and flip it over. The letters GMK are printed on the back. Somehow, I decipher the acronym, like the answer was yanked from memory. The device is a genetic mod kit, the type of device used to manipulate the genetic structure of human beings and turn the elite into the privileged enhanced human coalition. 20 minutes ago, if a person had asked me to explain exactly what an EHC was capable of, I doubt I'd have known. Now, it's as though my brain is a computer with an advanced search engine. All the data I've ever collected is back there, stored, and all I need to do is recall it. EHCs, what do I know about them? There are always rumors flying about advanced strength and stamina, enhanced intelligence, and that their cells can replicate quicker to help heal skin affected by radiation.
I work myself up out of the wooden crate with a plan to distract the guards. Silently, I land on bent knees, still hidden by the crate. I look around. No one saw. Near the edge of the crate opening juts a sharp nail. There's no rust, and they update us on tetanus anyway. I suck in a breath and drag my finger across the metal, wincing. Blood flows from the wound, dripping down my hand. I let the blood drop to the floor in a tiny puddle. Good. This will do. Around the corner, Yasei's waving away the two guards, who are dragging the incredibly limp bodies of Lacey and Drape.
Just bring them to the holding cell,
Yasei orders, turning his back to me. I dive between two smaller crates, just as Yasei goes behind the one I've left. A third guard joins him in his search. How in the world am I supposed to get around these two to go after Lacey and Drape? The new guard grabs a stepladder for Yasei, who climbs into the crate. He lets out a string of profanities. He has to know the genetic mod kit is missing.
Those kids are dead! Dead!
Yasei roars. Before Yasei has a chance to climb from the crate, a guard bends to the floor to check out the little pool of my blood.
Hey, Yasei,
the guard says.
I found some...
With a swift kick under the ladder, I bounce it up in the air and catch it with both hands. The poor guy doesn't even know what's happening, and I fling the base of the ladder into his face and knock him out cold.
What's taking you so long? Pass me down the ladder,
Yasei shouts, probably thinking the guard is waiting for him. I kneel and snatch the guard's pass card. A small part of me feels bad for Yasei. He's older, and I'm sure worked his whole life in the miserable mines before becoming who he is now. The other part of me is just impressed his fat self was able to climb into the crate with the ladder to begin with. Though not bad enough to help him, of course. I make for the exit to find Lacey and Drape. Yasei said something about holding cells. As if my mind is a step ahead of me, I can perfectly envision the entire underground city. By simply analyzing everything I know, I'm able to deduce the exact location of these so-called holding cells. I pat my pocket for the device, and I curve down the tunnel, racing to my imprisoned friends. I turn a corner down another deep tunnel with smooth walls. It's more like a fluorescent-lit science lab than the rugged caves I'm used to. I hear voices and duck into a darker corridor.
Where's Yasei?
A man asks, followed by the dull clunk of boots stomping by my hiding place.
He was supposed to meet me 20 minutes ago.
Stuck in that crate.
Who knows,
the other man says.
Maybe checking the latest shipments. He just sent those two kids down here from there.
The shadows from the men in the bright lights dance across the ceiling, and soon it's quiet again. They're gone. I grip the wall and notice the cut on my hand has nearly healed. It wasn't that deep, but it should still be bleeding. I hurry for another door. It requires a pass card as well. I swipe a different one. Access denied, it says. Unbelievable, I mutter. Not giving up, I study the exit, forming a plan. A ledge sits just above it, and to my right is a stairwell leading up. I scurry up the metal stairs and throw myself over the edge, gripping the bottom of the ledge with my fingertips and the stairs with the tips of my boots. I wait. An echoing mechanical voice sounds through the loudspeakers, but I can't make out the words because of the ringing in my ears from hanging upside down. I'm fairly certain the alarm is meant to alert the security staff. Yasei likely got out of his hole. The doors slide open. A man from the inside darts out as I release my feet from the stairwell and swoop down, landing square in front of the guard.
Hey!
He yells, and I throw a violent kick into his kneecap. Snap. The man screams and falls to the ground. A pang of guilt shoots through my core until a description of a person sounding like me is blared.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?